From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk to you. We've picked a couple of questions out of the mailbag. We'll do our best to answer them. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey there, Ross Petras. Of course, you are at your home in Toronto. It's just a beautiful spring going on here in the Midwest, at least, or at least today. Hey, tomorrow there could be a huge rainstorm. How's Toronto, though, right now?
Toronto's good. It's doing really well. And I have to hand it to you. You pronounced Toronto correctly.
Oh, thank you.
A lot of people, you did not pronounce the T.
Yeah.
Which is
Toronto.
A very... A lot of people say, how is it in Toronto? But you said Toronto, which is good.
Yeah. Didn't you say one time that if you're really into it, you say like Toronto?
Toronto. Yeah. Toronto. Something like that. Yeah. But I hear mostly Toronto.
Yeah.
Toronto.
Okay. I think that's what I'm going to stick with.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I said Toronto, I think I would really sound like a, you know.
No,
yeah.
I don't think it sounds
poser.
Good.
Well, of course, Kathy Petras at her home in Armenia. How did I do with the pronunciation there? Armenia? Do I need to do something?
No, just plain old Armenia.
Plain old Armenia. Okay. Great.
Yeah. Armenia, España. Make it sing, Fletcher.
Today we are jumping back into the mailbag. Always fun. We always love your questions. Please keep sending them to us. We are jumping off with a question about kind of a nonsense phrase that actually sort of kind of makes sense.
This one we actually had touched upon ages ago, but we got an email from Kenny. No idea where Kenny is from.
Hi, Kenny.
Who said, have you ever heard the sentence, colorless green ideas sleep furiously? And can you talk about it? I suspect Kenny is trying to check our bona fides. Do you think, Ross?
Very much so, I think.
I do remember us bringing this up at one point, and I think it was... It may not be this same thing, but I think it's when we were talking about things like garden path sentences.
Fletcher, you're correct. That was exactly what we were talking about. However, this is not a garden path sentence.
Just before we talk about this, since we brought it up, what is a garden path sentence? So then we can leave it behind.
I'm going to interrupt, though, and say, actually, we talked about it when we were talking about, because I made a note of this, Escher sentences.
Oh, Escher sentences. Right. So these were sentences that looked at first glance like they made sense, but when you really looked hard at them, that you couldn't make them sort of match up.
Exactly. The one I have right in front of me was the famous one that we talked about, was more people have been to Berlin than I have.
Yes, exactly.
It sounds perfect. You go, yeah, okay. But if you like really listen, you go, what?
Yeah, and a garden path sentence is a grammatically correct sentence, but your interpretation is incorrect.
Yeah, you sort of, it leads you down the winding path and then you end up...
The garden path, exactly. Right. But in this case, we have like nothing to basically... Actually, though, I want to say one quick thing. We were talking about Escher sentences. I was just reading the other day an ad, and it was something to the effect of, as a smoker, lignosis has cleared my lungs and stopped my daily cough. And I looked up that ad, and it's everywhere, in Canada at least. As a smoker, lignosis cleared my lungs. So is lignosis a smoker?
That's right.
And it's clearing
his lungs.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, because I'm seeing more and more of that. And I think people are really losing the basics of grammar at this point. I really do.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. And as fast and loose as we play sometimes on this show, it is pretty important to be able to make a sentence so that you can communicate an actual idea to people.
Although in
that
this
would
case,
be nice.
In this case, and here there's a problem, because in this case, you, the other side of the coin is you do get what's going on. James is the smoker.
Yeah.
And lignosis is the
thing.
What is lignosis,
Ross? I'm going to ask.
I know. I don't know. It's something.
You do in this particular case, but with that same problem, some minor differences in the actual words could cause you a headache.
Right. Exactly. And actually, though, interestingly enough, that leads into the Noam Chomsky thing, because we're talking about syntax, the order of the sentence, if it's correct or not, and then we're talking about meaning. So in a case, I mean, language is kind of tricky a lot of times.
Right. So this sentence, the colorless green ideas sentence, is something that Noam Chomsky came up with.
Yes. And that was, it was his huge thing when he was like discussing how something can be syntactically correct yet meaningless. Mm-hmm. And this is what we want to chat about with you. This is going to be a little chat time because Ross and I both have similar yet different, but we both kind of, I think, Ross, feel the same way. What do you feel about that sentence? Colorless green ideas sleep furiously.
I mean, I think in the abstract, it's not meaningless exactly.
Yes, we love you. Okay, you're in our team.
That was our idea too. And the key thing here is he actually in his book Syntactic Structures, which is not exactly easy reading at night, he had two sentences: colorless green ideas sleep furiously. And the next sentence was, furiously sleep ideas green colorless. And his point was that we can analyze colorless green ideas sleep furiously in two ways. The first way is syntax. We're talking about the word mm-hmm. order. Mm-hmm. Does the word order make sense? The second way, of course, is meaning. Does the meaning way make sense? And I think looking at this, Fletcher, can you see where it does it make sense in terms of like syntax?
Colorless green ideas sleep furiously.
So let's analyze it in terms of like how the sentence is structured.
Okay. I don't know how to do that. But
well, I think that we're saying it looks like a sentence.
It looks like I mean,
colorless green ideas. Is that you get like that's sort of like the subject of the sentence,
yeah,
right?
Right. Okay, sure.
Okay, so you see that. And then you have like what do those colorless like green ideas do?
They sleep.
Uh-huh. And then we have like how do they sleep?
Furiously.
They sleep furiously.
Right.
Now look at the second sentence. Okay, the second sentence is furiously sleep ideas green colorless. There's a modicum of sense in the first sentence, isn't
right,
there?
Right, correct, yes.
The second sentence, do you see any sense at all?
No, that's just a bunch of words.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So his idea, Chomsky's idea, was that we're kind of processing these sentences. When we see a sentence, we process it in two ways. We do it, first of all, like does it kind of make sense? Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Jabberwocky. 'Twas brillig in the slithy toves, did gyre and gimble in the wabe. And that doesn't sound, we don't know what gyre and gimble.
It was gyre.
It's not. Gimble. It is not.
I thought it was gyre.
Ah, my dear sister.
Yes. Yes. Go into this,
please. It's a hard G.
I have it right here. Lewis Carroll's Pronunciation Guide. And I will quote in the preface to Through the Looking Glass. The new words in the poem Jabberwocky have given rise. Pronounced slithy as if the two words slithy make the G hard in gyre and gimble.
Crap.
I love it. I'm really happy to know that because I remember, you know, it was this last week or the week before, I mentioned how much I loved Jabberwocky when I was a kid. And I do remember a teacher of mine in elementary school, so give that teacher credit, working with us to like break down Jabberwocky. And mm-hmm. I do remember her saying gyre because I had always read it as gyre, like myself. And so I was surprised when she said that, but also she was my teacher, right? So I'm really happy to know this.
Gyrating.
That's what she, that was her idea too. Yeah, no, she was right with you, Kathy.
Yeah.
Okay, I like your teacher.
Yeah. Oh, she was great.
It makes a lot of sense.
Lewis Carroll, dead to me now.
Okay, but jumping back here, we've got, you know, it kind of makes sense, like these things, even if we don't really know what the words necessarily mean or, you know, we can't define every part of each of these sentences. You're right that when you look at any of these, they kind of make sense. Jabberwocky or colorless green ideas sleep furiously.
Well, but his point was that you can have a syntactically sound sentence that means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And my argument, though, is as many others, is I think he's looking at it so dryly.
Yeah.
That it can indeed mean something. Then that's what Ross and I started talking about.
Yeah, that's the big point. We both think that he was a little bit, he basically said this sentence is basically ridiculous. You're not going to ever, it's remote from English. And I think he was kind of like separating the two ideas, syntax or word order or whatever, and meaning, and kind of making them really separated.
Mm-hmm.
And recently they've been doing all sorts of studies, which are way beyond me, and neurolinguistics, the brain, little parts of the brain that look at stuff. Mm-hmm. And the idea is there's much more of a dialogue in your head between syntax and meaning. And we kind of like half create meaning and or fully create meaning. Like I saw this sentence years ago, and colorless green ideas to me instantly meant something. Mm. Kind of new ideas that are sort of bland.
Oh, interesting.
You know, and they sleep and then like sort of in your head, but they're kind of darting around your head, like really dumb ideas are darting around your head all the time.
Oh, that's interesting. See, now I didn't think that at all. That's interesting. That's very interesting how you're thinking of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I didn't have like a concrete meaning for this, but it does. I mean, I can, you know, in that way where you hold an idea that doesn't necessarily have literal meaning to you, but it has like some sort of emotional meaning to you. Mm-hmm, I can hold that pretty easily with this sentence. You know, obviously colorless and green are opposed ideas here. Like something can't be colorless and green, but you can, I mean, if you're able to hold those two opposing ideas in your head at the same time, then that instantly is pretty easy to make it mean mm-hmm. something, you know. You still have this, there's an emotional feeling to it still.
But there's also, I mean, it also could in a way be, I mean, we have the word bittersweet, for example, combines bitter and yeah. sweet, and mm-hmm. it has a definite meaning.
Yeah.
So in effect, colorless green to me, I mean, to me very strongly, I didn't see it as meaningless at all. I just saw it as colorless.
Well, that we go back to, yeah, it's, I'm sorry, I've got to interrupt though. I was just going to say Sam Goldwyn with my favorite, maybe it's apocryphal, but I loved it. It's like, you got to take the bitter with the sour.
Yeah, I love that. Sorry. Yeah. Right.
But no, for me, and this is what I said to you, Ross, as a kid, I adored the book Harriet the Spy. And I think it was when the kids had found her notebook, she was like, you know, journaling, which we would now call it. She was like in the park and it was really green and she wrote angry green and the green was hurting. She couldn't figure it out and just crossed it out and wrote before the rain, the world is green. That was all she put. And mm-hmm. to me, colorless green gave me that feeling.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good one, Kathy. And that's the whole point. We do create meaning from what's seemingly meaningless. And I think that's where Chomsky, he basically evoked something. And same with the Jabberwocky, where we may not know the exact word, but we begin to like fill it in.
Yeah.
And there are all sorts of really complex, like I forget, N150 and P600 brain and reinterpretations in the brain, keeping trying to do stuff. But I guess I say for me, one really sympathetic answer is, I think I've said this before. When I first started to read, there was a word, S-W-E-A-T-E-R.
Yes.
And I had no idea what it was. And like, you know, Tommy came back from school and put his sweeter, I said sweeter as a kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the lack of, I mean, I didn't even try to, I didn't use my P600 part of the brain. I didn't even try to reinterpret it. But I accepted the grammar. I didn't worry about it. I just kept going.
Yeah.
It wasn't a very good story either, actually, but whatever.
But you know what this kind of reminds me of? And people use, I guess, this analogy incorrectly often, but if you guys ever watch David Lynch movies, like especially his more abstract ones, you know, people often think David Lynch means weird. And I guess that's true. But what he was amazing at doing was showing you something that doesn't necessarily have a literal meaning, but that you still very much understand on some other kind of level. And seeing a sentence like this, you're able to understand it on some level. And it might mean something very different to me than it does to you, but it's not meaningless. It's just not, literally,
like how you put
it's,
that.
Yeah, it's not literally obvious to everybody, right?
I agree. I think that was very well put. I really do, actually.
Thanks.
I think so too. It's okay. Although here, the key point really though, for Chomsky though, was that we do process language in different ways and we're not really quite aware of it all the time, I think. Mm-hmm. Actually, that reminds me, did you ever watch Star Trek The Next Generation?
A bit.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Temerian episode? Picard goes to some planet and the universal translator translates what the aliens are saying. Mm-hmm. But the aliens like speak basically in metaphor. So they takes the literal meaning and doesn't really get it. And he ends up killing the alien, I think. Mm. And then he realizes that the whole problem was the alien was trying to get him to help. and he didn't get it. And he finally figures out that they're speaking in, like, they have like metaphorical language. So
nothing means. Oh God, that would be so difficult I know. To live.
And he finally, I think he goes, we have to study mythology, like our mythology, human mythology, so we can really get what's going on. And he finally does, and they honor him, and they honor his, you know, being upset about killing the alien. But it was an interesting idea, really.
Yeah.
You know, that we think we know literal meanings. We're getting way off of Chomsky, but we think we know. But
to direct it back a little bit to Chomsky, because what fascinates me is the clash between, well, it's not even a clash, but what is nonsense? Coherence versus cohesion, if you will.
Yeah.
And it's like, so much of it is what we're bringing into it, and it gets all it can get twisted very easily, a la metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
We're all smart.
Well, we took our own garden path right here, didn't we?
Yes, sort of we did.
Wound around. I mean, obviously, we weren't directly talking Chomsky the entire time, because that would be a different conversation, probably a drier one. But, you know, that's part of the fun of language, is being able to take this idea that he had and to jump off and have, you know, the conversation that we just did.
Indeed. I've just got to say, Kenny was the one who generated this. I just saw his name again saying, you asked us to talk about it. So there you have
there
it,
you
baby.
Go. There you go, Kenny. Be careful what you wish for.
It's interesting. There was like a contest to basically try to put meaning into that thing. And there were a whole bunch of guys who did.
Oh, fun.
And the big poet, John Hollander, he was a huge American poet. He wrote a poem, which I'm going to read, which I don't particularly like, but here's this poem from 1971.
Don't say that.
Curiously deep, the slumber of crimson thoughts, while breathless in stodgy viridian, colorless green ideas sleep furiously.
I kind of like it.
You kind of like it? Okay, it's not bad. How about this one? Angus McIntosh, tortured in my mind's eye at its small peephole, sees through the virid glass, the endless ghostly oscillographic stream, furiously sleep ideas green colorless. He did the other one.
Oh.
Madly awake am I at my small window. I don't know, I sort of, that's a kind of cool.
Well, I don't know. I think Angus trying a little too hard.
Actually, I have to admit, I think Hollander's was better. I think I'm trying to like the Angus.
Okay, this is our assignment, guys. Next week, I want both of you to write a small poem, four lines only, with one of those two lines.
What about five lines and make it a limerick?
Okay, we can try that. I think we can all play with it. Let's see what
we
do.
Let's do it. A limerick with that.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
I think we could try with any kind of poem with that. Let's see it. Let's try it.
A sonnet. No, sorry.
An epic.
Epic.
And then me.
Well, Ross, you like Latin. You're also like ancient Greek. You could do a Homeric sort of thing.
Okay, I'll do a Homeric. Okay, that's great. Yeah. I'll do it in Latin, of course, but then you guys don't know it, so I can't read it to you. Oh, well, too bad. Yeah.
All right. Okay, thanks, Kenny, I think, for that.
Well, let's move on towards the next question.
Very good, Fletcher.
This is something I've always wondered about myself.
This is an email with a nice, neat, non-Chomsky question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. From St. Louis. It was a very simple one. She said, when do you use toward and when do you use towards?
Right. Yeah, and I don't have the answer. Probably the answer is it doesn't matter, or they're the same thing. What are you even talking about?
Actually, Fletcher, the answer is it's Latin.
Of course it is. It really is. Interesting. Okay.
Ross, take it away.
It's not Latin, Fletcher.
Oh.
It's actually Old English, and it doesn't really matter in general, but it sort of matters where you are. In the U.S. and in Canada, toward, no S, is preferred. In other English-speaking countries, such as the U.K. and Australia, towards is the most common. Now, I don't really think it really matters to me either way. Although, oddly enough, I'm going towards that. What would I say? I'm trying to think of what I would say.
I think I do S's more often.
It's funny. As you were talking, Ross, I could see Kathy sort of mouthing it to herself, trying to figure out what you said. And I was doing the same thing. I'm not even sure. Is anybody really sure what they say here? I wonder.
Oddly enough, when I was thinking that, I would say towards. I'm going towards, you know, whatever. But I think when I wrote it, if I wrote it, I think I would say toward.
I think you're right. I think that's what I do too. I think I say towards. I'm going towards that. And I'm writing it. I go, well, I'm writing it.
Yeah.
Towards feels like less formal, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Which is interesting because a lot of times we take the British version feeling more formal, don't we? Mm-hmm. Just because of our own biases, I guess. But not in this case. No, towards definitely feels less formal.
Which is really interesting, Fletcher, because I think Kathy found this old grammarian from England waxing on and on rhapsodic about towards. And he said, the etymology of the word furnishes no pretext for the S. Its addition is merely arbitrary, also capricious, for few writers use it uniformly. In the common parlance of uneducated people, nothing is more common than somewheres, anywheres, et cetera, et cetera. And nothing is more vulgar.
I love these guys. I really do.
I know.
Just calm down. What was this? Edward S. Gould.
Yeah, I thought it was a really great find, Kev. I love that.
Thank you.
He wrote Usage and Abusage in good English, I guess. But
I would love. They always do those things like, who'd you like to be on a desert? Who could you meet if they were dead or alive for dinner? I would like to have some of these guys at my table, you know? Wouldn't you?
I can't imagine what that conversation would be like. Is anybody doing anything but correcting each other? Do you know if we go all the way back, you said it started in Old English. Did it have an S? When did the S come in? Do you have any idea? Or like, did it start out with the S?
No, it did not start out with the S at all.
They both got, but I'm saying towards was the adverb derived from toward.
Yeah, but it comes from the word W-E-A-R-D in Old English.
Right.
And then they chucked on the two sometime, I think in later Old English, actually. And the two was chunked onto it, and then the S came in, I think from the 1700s, actually, into British English. And then from there, it went backward or backwards into American English was a different way. Which, speaking of which, then, Fletcher, we've gone into that. What do you say? I put my shirt on backwards. I put my shirt on backward.
Put my shirt on backwards.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, your shirt's on backward. Your shirt's on backwards. I think I'd say backwards.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah, me too.
I would too.
Backward to me is a different word. A backward, something is backward, is a different word to me. It means, it has a different meaning.
That's funny.
I put this on backwards. That is a backward.
Well, it's an adverb defining how you put.
Oh.
No, I know that, Ross.
No, I don't understand what you mean.
Oh, I'm saying backward, I only use as an adjective. That's a backward way of thinking.
Yeah, or...
Yeah, the adjective is right. You're right.
Yeah, or even that picture is backward. Backward? Yeah, but...
No, I would say backwards.
Really? You would say backwards?
I don't know.
Just that picture is backward. It's backward. It's backwards.
Oh, no, backwards. I would say it's backward, too.
No, you're right.
But you put it up backwards? You put it up backward. No, I'd still probably say backward. This is weird. I don't think there's much consistency in what I do.
No, there's not. You put it up backward.
Well, we have this thing, which is really meant to scream. Backwards is an adverb in English, in British English, and backward is an adjective.
I know.
In American English, the rule may be reversed. So I think the key thing we have to bring, you know, take home from this is don't worry about it. Whatever you think goes.
Or never use it.
Yeah, so basically we have the word, and that sometimes people put an S on it for whatever reason, and that's it. Like, there's no real answer. There's no definitional difference. There's no real hard rule about which should be used when. And even we ourselves have admitted we're not consistent.
Okay, let's go one more word now. One other four. A four word, another word.
Forward.
Forward. Mm-hmm. Do you say forward or forwards?
Move forwards. I'm not sure I say forwards. That seems a little weird now that I'm saying that out loud.
That's what I think. I'm the same way, Kath.
I've never used four words. I've always said forward.
Uh-huh. Forward. Although yeah. they're saying four words is more common in British, Canadian, Australian, and New Zealand English.
I'm looking this up, though, right now, and I am not necessarily agreeing with this because I am not seeing a four words in the OED. That's not archaic, unless I'm looking incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I've really seen four words even in British English. Have you, Lewis? You're in Canada.
I don't know. Forward is clearly what I would say and is clearly what I would expect. And I've been here so long now, I would think if I were hearing four words, I would have noticed it. And I don't think I did have. I think it may be one of those things they're just writing that this is used and it really isn't. But the key thing, I think, the takeaway is it doesn't really make any difference.
Yeah.
And the one thing I want to add is we should have gone into the word part. Do you know where that comes from? It's really sort of interesting.
You mentioned the Old English weird. That's the same thing, yeah.
And it comes from which Kathy will know, because it comes from the Proto-Indo-European were, sort of like they pronounce like that, which is to turn or to bend. And Kathy, which word is word related to?
Worm.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Worm. Yep. Worm. It's sort of weird when you think about it.
Yeah, I remember you saying worm. Worm is one of the oldest words that we have. Did they just have three words and one of them was worm, and so they made every other word out of worm?
Well, yeah. They,
worm, mom, and dirt.
Yeah.
That's very controversial. That study is very controversial, but it sounds sort of cool to me anyway.
Yeah.
Well, Ross and I keep talking about a book about this. We still haven't gotten our hands on it, but it'll come.
It's basically statistically going back, but there's a lot. The problem with it is it gets really complex, and there are a lot of people who go, this is crud. This is not true. This is crap. Yeah. We don't know. Actually, I'm going to ask you guys another word. Another word. Awkward.
Oh.
Is that related?
I never would have assumed that was related. No.
Yeah, it is. The awk is backhanded. They don't know where that word comes from. And you're turning back. Therefore, you're clumsy.
Oh, wow.
If I can interject, this is what's fascinating with language, though, because awk to me, of course, means turning back.
Oh, really?
I don't know why either.
Yeah.
Awk. Well, I think you're right. There's like, going back to Chomsky, the sound.
That's what I'm saying.
I think you're right, Kathy. I think that's really a good point.
Because awk to me means like doing this with my hands, kind of. Like, you can see. But it does. That, Ross. Like that.
Yeah, like that, Ross.
I think it is awkward. Yeah. So I think you're right.
Let the record show Kathy was sort of putting her hands together and sticking her elbows up in the air and turning her hands in toward herself.
It's a very not smooth move.
No, it's quite awkward, you might say.
Yes, you might.
Now, I'm going to throw one more word out here before we go on. There's an old English word, from word.
Oh.
Which means with the back turned as opposed to toward. Now, this is what I'm going to throw into you here. The old English word they have in the etymologies is from words with an S.
Ha ha.
Isn't that horrifying?
Oh. Yeah, interesting.
Which maybe means Kathy was right. Maybe it was from Old English too, S.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to understand from words. I don't even understand what that means. Okay, so my back is to you and I'm walking away. Is it walking away?
I'm about to depart. It says with my back turned.
Okay, so from words is like, I'm basically going, I've had enough of this. Boom, I'm from words.
The from is a preposition which means movement away in time or space. So you go towards someone and then you go fromward, from them, away.
So you're turning away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, we have to and from. And we don't really think about from now the same way, even though it kind of still means the same thing. Like if I'm getting something from you, what we're thinking about now is that I am getting something. Something is coming to me from you. But that means it's away from you, away you, right?
Well, to and fro.
Yeah, exactly. But we don't really think about it that way anymore.
And there is an old English word froward, which is the same thing. It's froward is the definition of froward is fromward.
So froward is the opposite of forward.
Yeah.
So I go forward and froward.
Uh huh.
Well, yeah. Froward is the opposite of toward.
Toward. Yeah.
To and fro, you said, and you're right. To,
yeah.
Toward, fro, froward. Anyways, let's get moving on. Fletcher, anyways or anyway?
Anyways, anyways. No, I never say anyways. Anyway. No, I never say anyways.
And we like you for that. No, anyways bad. But anyways is one of those things that you see all the time now. It's considered an informal thing. It's in all the dictionaries. They say it's a transition. We're going to become more accepting of it.
Hmm.
I detest it.
Do you want to do one last one?
This is another. You're like doing this just so I could be like the cranky one. In regards to...
In regards to, in regard to. Yeah, in regards to, in regards to, It's, okay, look, when you first said it, I thought the regards to sounded ridiculous, but now that I'm saying it out loud, I don't think it's that bad.
I agree with you, actually, now that we're talking about it. I thought I would hate it, but I don't.
No, technically, it's considered wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Regard is a noun. Is like it says like in consideration of or whatever. It's a verb. You can say regards, and that means applies to. You know, so you technically really shouldn't say it. People have a real problem with this. I don't like. Kathy doesn't either.
Yeah, I don't think I mind that much.
But the only time you really should say regards is when it's, you know, like giving my regards to some people.
Uh-huh.
Give my regards to Broadway. Yeah.
Sorry.
But you shouldn't say it. I think we can not give Kathy regards to her singing.
I think we should have a karaoke hour.
Oh, wow.
But I don't really have too much problem with that at this point. It's become so idiomatic. And we at one point we had a book and we had a headline which was the Trump, U.S. is in good position in regards to North Korea. It was a headline in ABC News.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you understand it instantly. Do you really care if it's a verb here?
I don't. Actually, you know? I think you're right. I think that I still don't like anyways, though. I think anyways is bad. Regards, okay.
But the key thing really with all of this is, and you know, it's constant. Is language is constantly changing. And things that were once wrong are now correct. And it sort of matters in the sense that you want to get your point across and you also want to be like respected, not thought like a fool or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to basically go with, you know, what sounds right to us now. And I think we're all in agreement. Anyways sounds bad, in regards to doesn't sound bad.
Although I bet, yeah, in like 5 or 10 years, I'm going to say anyways is just Danzy. Very possibly.
Yeah, I mean, we need to like acknowledge that anyways sounds bad to us in our...
Now
in our very specific corner of this English
context.
Language, there are a lot of people who speak different kinds of English, you know, that may say it anyways.
Right.
Like, and it's perfectly normal for their context.
But given the context, for example, one thing I don't like is when people go, oh, you know, it doesn't really matter. Language is changing. Yeah, but if you want to get a job... And if you want to, like,
you have to stick
write
to the
a paper,
register. Yeah,
you do have to speak to that, to the language that most people are using now in our context. And that's why I would never advise someone, even if they said anyways all the time, and even if we're both all saying it doesn't really matter, I would still say don't do anyways in a memo to your boss or in an article. That's what I would say too. Unless you're in a place where everyone does say anyways, then it's fine.
I'm going to sleep furiously about this topic.
Well, in regards to that, Kathy.
Yeah, I have two small children. I will sleep any way I can, furiously.
I think you win.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org.
If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetris@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you were going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.